The film Who Framed Roger Rabbit is turning 30 this year. It was the second highest grossing movie of 1988, and it's still considered a landmark for the way it combined hand-drawn animated characters and live characters acting together on screen. The Trout Museum of Art in Appleton is celebrating that legacy with its new exhibit, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? The Art of Classic American Animation. The exhibit runs until August 31st and features hand-painted cells from Roger Rabbit and drawings by classic Looney Tunes animator Chuck Jones. Bill Heater is an Appleton native. It's his collection on display at the museum. Bill, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for the interest in the collection and interest in the Trout Museum.
Yeah, what got you interested in collecting these classic animation cells?
Well, actually, when I was a little child, I was walking down the street and an Acme safe fell on my head. I'm sorry. That was a cartoon. Sorry. It actually started. There's two parts to this. It started when I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and I would come home from school over the lunchtime, and this is in Appleton, and I would be watching Looney Tunes cartoons on the local TV station. So I'd have my little peanut butter sandwich and a glass of milk, and I'd go out and watch these cartoons over the lunch hour. And my dad would tell me, if that big old rooster ever comes on, referring to Foghorn Leghorn, he said, let me know, and I'll come out and have lunch with you. So there would be times when good old Foghorn would be on, and my dad would come out and watch the cartoons, and those are just great memories for me. So fast forward about 20 years, I was working for a gift wrap company and party goods company in Appleton called Art Fair, and I was doing some licensing, and we were trying to get the Warner Brothers license. So I was on the phone constantly to the people out there trying to make the connections and get the license. And that didn't happen, unfortunately, but it did allow me to connect with other people in the animation industry, and that kind of refed my enthusiasm. So I guess if you had to sum it up, it all goes back. I can blame it on my parents, like a lot of things, right?
Let's talk about what a cell is. People use that word. It's C-E-L, right? When I look at an animation cell, what am I looking at?
Well, it's basically, it was in the old days, meaning pre-World War II, was a piece of celluloid. And it's typically 10.5 by 12.5 by size. It's got peg holes at the bottom. And the way it works is there's an artist who does a general drawing, and then you lay this clear cell, just short for celluloid, over it, and they'll ink the outline of the character or the pose or whatever. Then they'll flip it over, and it will go to a separate team called the painters, simple ink and paint, and they will flip and paint on the back side. So the ink is on the front, the paint is on the back side, and it allows it to be filmed in better clarity, and there's no distortion of color or texture. So that's what they did pre-World War II. Post-World War II, they went to acetate. So even though they call them cells, it's no longer celluloid. It's done on acetate. But traditional animation was still done the same way. You had inkers and painters and people who would draw the characters, rough sketches, and then the finished sketches, and then it would be filmed. So what you're looking at in the Roger Rabbit exhibit are the actual cells that appeared under camera and on the screen that were inked and painted by the artist.
And how many cells would make up, I don't know, a second of animation?
Well, typically, I mean, classic animation, meaning Disney and Warner Brothers in the 40s, 50s, early 60s, would be 24 cells per second. So you can just imagine, you know, an hour and a half cartoon, for example, how many pieces of art there are to that. But then in the 1960s, you know, when television came into play and they had to cut budgets, they really knocked it down a lot. And there's many cartoons that were done with 6 or 8 cells per second. So that's why you had kind of the herky-jerky motion of the 60s and 70s cartoons, or the characters wouldn't move because that way they just have to animate the lips or the arms or whatever. So it's just a way to produce them much more cheaply.
Now, a lot of the material display on the Trout Museum of Art from your collection is from the movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit? And I think a lot of people, I wondered this as a kid, you've got Bob Hoskins and other humans interacting with Roger Rabbit and other cartoon characters. Can you talk about what you have in this exhibit and what it tells us about how they had, you know, people and cartoons acting together?
I mean, it was an amazing thing, and there's a number of things that made it so fabulous, at least in my opinion. One was, just as an example, Bob Hoskins, who was the character Eddie Valiant, never knew what Jessica Rabbit looked like until well after the movie was completed. So he was either acting against characters who were eventually painted over or to people off stage. And a lot of the props were these mechanical contraptions that had to wave, you know, knock over chairs, knock over pictures, wave guns through the air. And it was all done through these pretty sophisticated mechanical maneuvers, almost like maquettes are operated, where you've got strings and wires and everything moving them. And then the animators had to animate to the movement of those props. I wish one of the things, I have a few cells where it shows the actual animation and the live behind it, so to speak, wow. The live props or whatever. So if people go through the exhibit and look closely, they can actually see behind the cell and see the actual prop that was used that the character or that the actors were acting against. It's kind of fun.
We're talking to Bill Heater. His collection of classic animation cells is on display this summer at the Trout Museum of Art in Appleton. Bill, you also have, you mentioned earlier, those Looney Tunes ones. You've got some classic cells from, I think, animator Chuck Jones. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. Chuck, to me, was the quintessential Warner Brothers director. There's probably five famous Warner Brothers directors, Tex Avery and Bob Clampett and Bob McKimson and Chuck and Friz Freleng. And a lot of these characters, especially Tex Avery, was about exaggeration of characters. So the eyes would bulge out or the characters would stretch or whatever. Chuck was just the opposite. He was all about subtlety. So whereas in one scene, one director would animate it and the character would act one way, in Chuck's case, Bugs Bunny may just raise his eyebrow or may just look at the audience. And I love the subtlety of the way Chuck handled that. The unfortunate thing is Warner Brothers, and really throughout animation history, they didn't have a lot of respect for the art. And in the early 1960s, I've heard two versions. One was Jack Warner and the other was one of his accountants decided this art wasn't of value at all. So they ended up disposing of all of it. Thousands and thousands of animation cells and pieces of art were destroyed. So as Chuck was touring colleges and into the 70s, his daughter Linda suggested he start recreating the famous scenes from his cartoons. And that was about the time I was starting to do the licensing. So I connected with them. I bought my first cell, a limited edition. I have to tell you, Rob, my hand was shaking when I was writing that check because I was a college student fresh out of school, I should say, and I didn't have a lot of money. And here I'm spending $100 on this cartoony picture that I'm going to hang on my wall. But one led to two and two led to four, and Chuck kept releasing them because he had so many, you know, really terrific cartoons. There were plenty of scenes that he could recreate. And the collection just kind of mushroomed from there.
You just talked about cartoons as art. You said they weren't treated as art back in the day, the art and the animation. But now you've got your collection. It's at an art museum. Are we taking this art, this animation, more seriously now?
I think it's a two-edged sword. I think people who grew up with this kind of animation appreciate it. They understand it. And frankly, they're looking at it as a collectible because there hasn't been a full-feature, hand, traditionally done animation cartoon since, I think, 2012 in the Disney's Frog and the Princess. And it's really moved to CGI, which is computer-generated graphics. And so I think younger people probably, they're so adept at the computer and they're so used to seeing the things on TV, they're all CGI. There aren't animation cells. So it's really not a collectible from that standpoint because it doesn't really exist in the same way. So I think it's a generational thing. And right now, I would say animation is starting to have a rebirth because people who saw the traditional stuff in the 50s and 60s and 70s are now trying to find the cells because they realize they don't exist anymore. They don't make this kind of art anymore. So I'm hopeful it'll continue to have interest. And that's why I give the Trout Museum a lot of credit because they're kind of at the forefront of getting this out in front of people and recognizing it as a legitimate and appreciated form of art.
That's a good place to leave it. Bill, thanks a lot for joining us today.
I appreciate it. I hope people stop by the exhibit, and thanks again for your interest, Rob.
Bill Heater's collection is on display at the Trout Museum of Art in Appleton until August 31st as part of the exhibit, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? The Art of Classic American Animation.